Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. He doesn't always play nice. And that's what gets you the information you need. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we're back. We're a week away from opening day. And that will mean, the Jays, have they announced Drew Hutchison's the opening day start yet? Or is it just Mike Wilner's announced it, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I hinted at it as well. Anyhow, we're a week away from opening day. And the Toronto Blue Jays, at least what we're told, are expected to finalize their roster tomorrow night or tomorrow, which will essentially mean the we'll finally get the results of that pitched battle between Derek Barton and Justin Smoke for first base, and maybe find out whether or not Devin Travis actually starts a second, and who the final left-hander in the bullpen is, although my guess is it's probably going to be Cole Hines. So we're getting ready, in other words, for the start of the season, and we're very happy. One of our favorites, Jonah Carey, is in studio for the next hour, taking your calls at 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. He is author of Up, Up, and Away, and I'm not going to read the rest of the title because it's just too damn long.
It's too long.
Okay, I'll read it. Travis wants me to read it. The Kid, the Hawk, Rock, Vladdy, Pedro Legrand, Orange, Yuppie, The Crazy Business of Baseball, and the ill-fated but unforgettable Montreal Expos. This is hard for me to do, considering the fact I just finished interviewing the Harry C. Wyatt Professor and Head, Virginia Tech Wake Forest University School of Biomedical Engineering and Sciences. That's quite a title.
It is.
I mean, when you're talking to that guy, you got to pay attention.
Well, I feel like those are legitimate accolades earned through a career of rigorous study, whereas I'm just messing with you is essentially what's happening. And when I do this in the States, too, it's long enough, and then they trip over Le Grand Orange. They're like the Grand Orange. And they're just struggling with it. So, I mean, at least when you say it, it flows nicely.
Well, you know, I mean, I did live in Quebec for 12 years. The
correct
least I can do is say Le Grand Orange.
You bet.
By the way, Jonah Carey and Andrew Stoughton will be in conversation tonight at Opera Bob's.
Great venue. This is going to be
a terrific
fun
venue.
We packed the joint last year. They have the like ballpark style hot dogs and cheap beers, and it's a great place.
Yeah,
that's a good
fact, Stoughton's there, but
well, Stoughton's good too. No, but you start the night there, and then if you're up for it, yeah, the whole Dundas Strip is fun over there. That's become like more or less stomping grounds when I'm in Toronto.
Yeah, it's almost become like baseball hipster central.
Yeah. Which is good.
Yeah, it is. Are you wearing a flannel shirt to this?
I just, no.
But
just
you've got your shirt untucked. That's
thing
good.
And whatever, and yeah.
Construction boots?
I do not have, I'm not really a hipster. I think I'm too old to be a hipster.
How old are you?
I just turned 40.
Yeah, you're too old to be a hipster.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you've got to be, I think official hipster age is 30, it's 34. I think even 35 is too old.
I also cannot pull off facial hair. I grew a beard once. I was 20. I had a long distance relationship with a girl who became my wife, by the way. And I hadn't seen her in a while. And for just like a month, I hadn't seen her. So I just grew a beard and I got off the plane. And she goes, no, that's nice. Shave that garbage off. That looks terrible. Get rid of it. I'm like, yep, you're probably right. Yep.
Yeah, I'm like you. The Blair males have luckily been blessed with absolutely no history of male pattern baldness.
Yeah.
None. Zippo. Nada. Unfortunately, we can't grow a beard or a mustache to save our
life.
It's
a good trade-off.
Well, I think it is every now and then. Every now and then, I'd like to be bald.
Really?
Like totally bald.
Huh.
Just,
I mean, you could just voluntarily shave it off.
Yeah, I'd look like, not with this noggin.
Well, if you're, I don't know, if you were playing for Joe Madden, you could do it, and then I feel like it'd be, you know, well-received.
You know what happened? I did, when I was living in Montreal, this is a true story,
mm-hmm.
And if anybody out there worked with me at the Gazette, they'll remember this. I want to say it was like my second week in Montreal, and my wife was still in Calgary at the time, and I had been out the night before, and I went to get my hair cut, and I guess I kind of fell asleep. But you know, and I went to one of those real Montreal things, right, where nobody spoke English or French, and they used straight razors and stuff that. And, you know, and there were the guy doing it had a tattoo on half his face and all that. I woke up and I had, like, you know, not even a brush cut. I had less than a brush cut. I looked like I'd just been recruited by the National Front or something like that. It was awful.
Really?
It was absolutely awful. So I ended up wearing a hat.
The first time second time I went to Israel, I was 14. And that summer, that's the only time I ever had like full shaved head. I just said, give me a haircut. They just bzz, bzz, bzz. I was like, I'm not sure I asked for that, but okay.
As for that,
we're doing it, but it was 100 degrees, so I guess that's okay.
Anyhow, now that we've wrapped up the issue of baldness, what have you seen? What have you seen this spring that's got your attention? What storylines? What pitcher did you see? What player did you see? What excites you?
Yeah, the Chris Bryant thing is pretty interesting for a bunch of reasons. Number one, he's really good, and it's interesting about the prospecting industry. I feel like when I started in this business, and maybe even a little bit more so when you did, prospecting wasn't as big a deal. You had Baseball America starting off, but it wasn't the same. Not like every site has a prospect list. And we've known about Chris Bryant, you know, since he was in college ripping it up. And in some cases, it could be kids in high school or whatever, we know. And so nobody really surprises us anymore. Like, I can remember when Vladimir Guerrero was coming up. And that was still, like, Baseball America was around, but this is the 90s, so it wasn't quite the same. And he had this mystique about him, and he was playing in Harrisburg, in AA Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is about, I don't know, 7 or 8 hours from Montreal. And my friends and I were like, I was in college, should we drive down? Should we go see this guy? Mm-hmm. No, we almost wanted to have the veneer of mystery, like, what's going to happen with this guy? I don't. Maybe that makes me a hopeless romantic, but with Brian, it's almost a given that we know he's going to be good. Okay, so he's hit, I think it's 9 or 10 home runs at this point in the spring. He's definitely good enough to be their starting third baseman right now. He probably was last fall, but he certainly is right now. So the question then becomes, what do you do with him? And there's a service time debate. The service time debate is, there's two things. Number one, you could have what's called the Super 2 arbitration deadline, where you wait until June, and then you call him up. That's not going to happen. What's probably going to happen is they're going to hold him back just for 2 weeks, and then they at least get to keep him for another year before he becomes eligible for free agency. And somehow this has become this lightning rod of debate, because the theory is, well, he's going to hit 9 home runs in his first 9 games. A, he probably won't. And B, you know, based on the fancy stats or whatever, even the best case scenario for Bryant, it's not going to be that much for the team, and you get to keep him for an extra year. So you should leave him in the minors for the extra 10 days, but somehow this has become a big discussion.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of an outgrowth of, and I'm just reading a Nate Grower's piece on Fangraphs. I don't know if you've had a chance to read it. It's an outgrowth, I think, of something Tony Clark talked about when he visited the Blue Jays for his part of his spring training tour. The whole notion of the share of revenue that is going towards player salaries. And you know, I think, and I'm trying to remember which, if it was the late Michael Wiener or Gene Orza, I remember somebody telling me one time that part of the thing that you see happen sometimes with, whether it's the NFL Players Association or other players' associations, is you get all sorts of other issues, steroids, draft, you get all sorts of issues, and sometimes you kind of lose track of the percentage of revenue going to payroll as a union. You just do, because a guy's making $10 million. He's really not concerned about, you know, I'm making $10 million. I don't know what the percentage of revenue is. And I'm wondering if maybe we're not seeing if this, Jonah, isn't part of the discussion, kind of going back to hardcore economic issues. Because Tony Clark kind of touched on that, you know. He said several times, look, we're aware of service time. He said it's become more of an issue as far as we're concerned than it's been in the past. And I wonder if that's kind of a shift back to hard economic issues.
Yeah, well, and for some very quick background on me, I was a journalism guy and whatever. When I came out of Concordia University, it was just difficult to get the kind of job that I wanted to do, which is basically sit on my high horse and talk about sports. It would have been, my path would have been at the Montreal Gazette, and I would have had to wait for, let's say, Red Fisher to retire or something before getting the job, which is not happening. Right. So, you know, I didn't want to write about high school field hockey, and so the quicker way in was to find something else. Started writing about econ for a couple of years and the stock market and things. And then I thought my niche would be to write about sports business. That was going to be my job. I would have been Darren Rovell before Darren Rovell. That was what I wanted to do. So I've been attuned to this all the time. I did read Nate Gross' story. It's good. And the stat that I've quoted a zillion times is in 2002, the players had 58% of the share of revenue and the owners had 42%. 2012, it had flipped. 58 for the owners, 42 for the players. That's not because the owners are being horrible. It's because revenue has exploded, and it's very difficult to make the gains commensurate with those gains as far as salaries go. In other words, by that logic, you know, Mike Trout should be making $50 million a year.
Right.
Which, but I don't have a problem with making $50 million a year.
And this, I'm just going to interrupt. This gets to the whole notion, yeah. And I know I can't remember who wrote this, but the whole notion that LeBron James is vastly underpaid.
He should be making $100 million a year
exactly.
At least. The franchise value alone, forget you, that's an intangible thing because you have to sell the franchise. But yes, he should be making tons of money. I do believe that. The almost deeper debate here, not a debate, but just a discussion is, fans get annoyed at this stuff because it's posted all over the sports page and you can go to whatever.com and see all the salaries and you don't see the salaries of, well, any, I mean, the Blue Jays are obviously owned by a gigantic company to name one, but there are, you know, name your owner, whatever it is, the Steinbrenners or whoever, and they're worth infinity money, but we're not scrutinizing it in the same way. And we don't see a Steinbrenner ground out to second base with the game on the line, and then we get upset and whatever. So, yeah, you know, this will be potentially something for the CBA, but here's what I say. It is the case that the revenue split has definitely gone heavily the other way, but baseball's union definitely has done a better job looking out for the interests of its members than any other sports union. This goes back, you talked about Orza and Miller, or Wiener rather, but it goes back to Marvin Miller and Don Fear, especially Marvin Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the salaries are guaranteed, first of all, which are not in football. Secondly, you're less likely to be concussed, and if something does come up in player safety, they tend to be on it. So I am sensitive to the player's plight all the way, and if all things being equal, I tend to go in that direction rather than the owner's direction. However, I do think that things are pretty good.
Do you subscribe to Nate Groh's theory that perhaps the Major League Baseball Players Association ought to start looking at a salary cap?
No. Because the only thing that a salary cap does in he wants to peg the salary
he
cap
wants
to player revenue.
I'm sorry, right.
Yeah, so that at least makes some degree of sense. But there could be unintended consequences if you go in that direction. Teams could start manipulating it, and then there's a floor. It just gets into you put artificial constraints on what teams want to do. Because even though I definitely am interested in players, I tend to be something of a free market guy too, as much as you can in the sport that has revenue sharing and all that. Where I say, if the I don't know. Who's rebuilding? The Braves. The Braves have been a good team for a long time. They've decided, you know what? They're not ready to compete right now. The Nationals are much better. We're going to strip our payroll down. We're going to get a bunch of prospects. And we're going to go forward. If there's a salary floor, now they got to go throw all this money at some garbage player, which doesn't make any sense. And from the cap perspective, you know, then you're saying that might limit the ability of the guys at the upper end to make too. So what might end up happening is that guys who are okay players are going to get overpaid, which, God bless them, they can have their money, but I just think teams should be able to make intelligent decisions more than anything.
In conversation with Jonah Carey on the Jeff Blair Show, let's bring it a little closer to home, the Toronto Blue Jays. What are your expectations for the Blue Jays this year, and what should Blue Jays fans, what should they be optimistic about, and what should they be concerned about?
So I think from the perspective of I guess at this point I'm probably an American national media guy is sort of my job. From that,
if you want to be one, day.
That's.
I was going to claim. Well, I think we can still claim.
Oh, I'm a Canadian, but I'm just saying I play in that sandbox now.
Yes.
I have been, I would say, somewhere between moderate to optimistic on the Blue Jays. Not like pie in the sky, like they're going to win every year, but looking at the strengths of the team and definitely, you know, scrutinizing them, as I do with every team, by the way. I'm not like, Yankees and Red Sox are awesome. I'm paying attention. And before the Stroman injury, I was ready to pick the Jays to win the division this year. I can't claim that Stroman is a superstar. I can't say that single-handedly changes things, but it's so close to me between Baltimore, Boston, and Toronto. I think the Yankees and the Rays are the next level down. Mm-hmm. Those three other teams are very, very close that now we have a predictions column, which will come out next Monday on Grantland on opening day. Still don't know who I'm going to take for the AL East. It's so close. I do think that young pitching is the key to this team, which is not really a controversial opinion. Love Hutchison to be a breakout pitcher. Mm-hmm. Sanchez and Norris I find very interesting. I also love the Ozuna and Castro story. That's like a fun baseball debate about these guys have no experience, but you know what? They're probably the best arms for the job, so screw it. Let's put them in. Well, what does that mean about service time? What does that mean about he's 20? Is he going to break down? I love that. That's, you know, I read the National Post had a great story, and it's something that's been here in the media, but not so much in the States. But I've been sinking my teeth into it because I find it fascinating. And in a division that's so close, if you just have two young electric relievers who suddenly are really good, Yeah, that could be enough to swing it right there.
And it's interesting because both of those relievers were either going to go north with the team or go to the Florida State League, which is...
Yeah, not AAA. Not AAA or AA,
yeah. which is remarkable. Our friends at Sports Illustrated like the Cleveland Indians to win the World Series. Are you on board with that?
I picked them to win the division. People make you make predictions, yes. But as far as the playoff predictions are useless. I mean, the Giants and the Royals made the World Series last year. Were they the two best teams? Hell no. No way. So, but I do think they can win the division, and that is more or less an endorsement on saying I think they can win the World Series. But there are variables there, too. Part of the reason that I feel good about the Indians is because the first four teams in that division are all very interesting, except for the Twins, but they all have flaws. And I include the Tigers, who've lost Scherzer and Pfister now at this point over the last couple of years. And they're relying on guys like Cabrera and Martinez and Verlander, guys who are getting a little bit older. And so that's interesting. What it's going to come down to with Cleveland is their young pitching also, where I've been bullish on Danny Salazar for the last 2 years. He's now in the minors. Trevor Bauer, I like a lot. Carlos Carrasco had a huge second half. So if those guys can kind of come into shape the way that it doesn't have to be Kluber-esque as he did last year, but if they can contribute, then I do like them. They picked up Brandon Moss, a good power hitter. Back of the bullpen looks pretty good. They have a solid foundation to win 90-ish games, and that puts them in the mix.
Are the Washington Nationals the best team in baseball right now?
Probably, but you know what? Don't sleep on the injury thing right now because they're going to start the season with Rendon is shaken up. Mm-hmm. Worth is on the DL. Span's on the DL. Their pitching is almost unimpeachable. If anybody goes down, they throw out Tanner Roark at a 2.93 ERA last year.
That's their sixth starter.
That is silly. It's silly. Yeah, they didn't really. I mean, I get why they got Scherzer. Ted Lerner is 89 years old.
Kind of the Yelich thing with Prince Fielder.
Yeah, it is. You know, you're an octogenarian and you have all the money in the world and you'd like to have a ring before you pass on to the next life. Mazel tov, go for it. That's fine. And when the lineup is all healthy, they really have no weaknesses. I like all those guys. I like Wilson Ramos, the catcher. I like Ian Desmond's a great player. I like Harper. I mean, I have no problem with anybody. But if you're going to play extended stretches without two or three or four guys in the lineup, yeah, that could come back to get you. I still think they're probably good enough to win that division either way. But if you're talking about when we get to the playoffs and we're matching up and whatever, if they really are dealing with no worth or this guy's not happening or whatever, that can be an issue. I would bet that by the deadline, even if guys are relatively healthy, they go out and get maybe like a left-handed hitting thumper. Because other than Harper, they don't really have that. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rendon sort of. Mm-hmm. But I think that gives them a little bit of insurance to do that. It could be kind of a 350 plate appearance kind of guy who's not an everyday guy, but you can plug him in or whatever. One level above late career Matt Stairs. That might be impossible, by the way, because late career Matt Stairs was awesome.
I was going to say, yeah.
But you know what I mean.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. Let's go to the phone lines with Jonah Carey. Let's go to Jordan in North York. You're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with Jordan Carey and Jonah Carey and Jeff Blair. Go ahead, Jordan.
Jeff and Jonah, how are you guys doing today?
Good. Too many J's.
Let's talk some, what's that?
Too many J's. Jonah, Jordan, Jeff.
Go ahead. Yeah. Well, let's talk J's. How about that?
All right.
This has been an awesome spring. I can't remember a spring that's been so exciting. So many stories. It's Bautista Encarnacion, Donaldson, and Martin's in. Can he catch the knuckleball? And the young guns in the bullpen, the young guns in the starting rotation. It's been an awesome spring. So fun to watch. But I really think that one of the players on the Blue Jays that's going under the radar that could possibly have the biggest difference this year, that could make the biggest difference of any Blue Jay, is Jose Reyes. Right now, and I mean, you look at the spring stats, and I know it's dangerous to look at spring stats, but if you project it out for the year, and if we get 150 games of Jose Reyes batting 300 with 10 to 15 home runs, 25 steals, I think he makes a huge difference for this baseball club all year.
Yeah, I would think that.
You have a laptop in front of you. I don't have Baseball Reference. How many times has Jose Reyes played 150 games? I would bet no more than three, and that might be high.
Let me look here.
But, of course, he's definitely a valuable member of the team. I don't think even in a best-case scenario you're ever going to get peak Reyes again just because he had kind of young player skills, I guess, to a certain extent.
Yep.
But he's certainly solid, and there's really a dearth of talent at shortstop. This is not the days of A-Rod and Jeter and Nomar all coming up together and Miguel Tejada right behind them. We're kind of, we got Tulo and Desmond, and there's some guys who can play the position, but it's not the strongest. So if Reyes can be anything close to that, yeah, absolutely. I think that he could definitely help the club. What do you got there?
five times.
Really?
In a row.
Well, back in the day.
I'm sorry. Five times, four in a row, but only once since 2008. Played 160 games for the Marlins in 2012.
Well, then they sold high on him.
They certainly did sell high on him.
I mean, he's a solid player. He's making a lot of money. But again, there's just so little talent, so little elite talent at shortstop that if he plays 136 games and hits 280 with some walks and nine home runs and 19 steals and pretty good defense, that's very, very good too.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to think that the guy that I think has to, I don't know if I'd say step up, but I think Michael Saunders has to stay healthy and has to contribute as a left-handed bat in that order, because they're really scuffling.
Yeah,
they're really scuffling for lefties.
Well, I mean, I get what happened with Lynn, and you know they moved some salary, and he was on the last year of his contract or whatever. He's on the option year, but that's another team. Speaking of left-handed bats at the deadline, that would make a lot of sense. And we'll see where that bat is. I mean, an ideal scenario, obviously, if Devin Travis can seize the job, that'd be great. But if second base is uncertain, you know, if they can go out and get something like, is it crazy to imagine like a Chase Utley? Like that would be perfect for this team. That's the kind of guy you'd want.
Eddie in Fort Erie, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Go ahead, Eddie.
Well, Jeff and Jonah, I just want to say hello, and it's an honor for me to talk to Jonah Carey. I mean, I hear you on the Jeff Blair Show, and you're a pretty interesting guy, I have to say.
Thank you.
Yeah, he's okay. He's kind of interesting.
I'm friendly.
He's friendly and interesting.
I wanted to ask Jonah a question about baseball in Montreal because of the book related to the Expos. I love rivalries in sports.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you think about rivalries in sports, you think of the Red Sox, the Yankees. You think of the Dodgers and the Giants, and you think about all the other teams in sports. And I would really love to see baseball back in Montreal, so that way the whole country of Canada can, you know, say to themselves, which team do you like the most? Do you like the Blue Jays? Do you like or do you like the Expos? Because baseball in Canada is kind of slowly climbing the ladder, if you will, as far as being a baseball country. I mean, I know we're still in hockey, which is obvious, but you know what? The more players that we have in Major League Baseball, the more that, you know what, we should have, you know, a second team in back in baseball, like the Expos. That way we can all have that same thing to live vicariously. You know, do you like the Expos? Do you like the Blue Jays? And I really hope that happens.
Go ahead.
Yeah, first of all, of course, there is more talent around. You know, I guess the previous generation would be like Larry Walker and Eric Gagne, but now Votto and Martin, and things are really coming along, and even a guy like Pompey, and we'll see. There's a lot of potential out there. It's a funny thing. I'm 40, so I guess I grew up with 80s baseball, then 90s baseball. And I didn't perceive the Jays as a huge rival of the Expos directly. And part of that was there was no interleague for much of that. There was the Pearson Cup. Nobody paid attention to it. When interleague did start, though, it got interesting. And one of my top three sporting events I ever went to, which is my most Canadian day probably ever, was 97, July of 97. And the Jays were playing the Expos at what was called Sky Dome at the time.
Jeff Juden
against his childhood hero, Roger Clemens. And Juden struck out 14 and outdueled Roger Clemens. And if you don't remember what Roger Clemens did for the Blue Jays, pretty good. But basically peak Pedro stats. And Juden beat him. It was an amazing thing. Packed house. It was 50,000 odd people. Then I ran down to Molson Amp, which is about 3K. We sprinted the whole way and saw the last 45 minutes of a Rush concert. That was my most Canadian day by far. And it was fantastic. But at that point, you really did have excitement. It was a beautiful day. Roof was open. The two teams were going at it. And what people talk about with the possibility of baseball in Montreal, and this is getting 17 steps ahead because it's still a lot of things. You need $1 billion. You need MLB to approve it. Although Ron Manfred has been sympathetic, and I've asked him directly, and he said Montreal is absolutely viable market and we are interested in expansion at some point. But whether it's expansion or relocation, what would make that more exciting obviously would be if whatever the Montreal team is called played in the AL East. That would be the killer, because then in fact, even if you expanded it and went to, let's say, 32 teams, if there was a scenario in which it was Red Sox, Yankees, Toronto, and Montreal in one division, oh boy, that would be amazing for Montreal, because then you've got a lot of geographic rivalry and you've got the direct thing with Toronto, and that would be great. That would enhance the thing where it's not this esoteric thing, oh, do I like the Montreal team or Toronto team? It's these two teams are battling. Let's choose sides right now.
I've asked people if baseball were to go back to Montreal, would they foresee Could they foresee the Jays and the Expos in the same league? People with the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
They're not that interested.
Mm.
It's only, and I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean it would happen, but I think the thinking is one National League team, one American League team, kind of have a foot in both markets. I would be surprised if they'd both end up in the same league. But you know, it's pretty obvious. I mean, one thing we'll say about Rob Manfred, we're going to take a break in a minute and we'll come back. But one thing we'll say about Rob Manfred, Jonah, it's pretty obvious that he is open to a lot of things, isn't he? He will not dismiss, and Tony Clark made this point as well. He said the thing with Rob is Rob won't dismiss anything outright. He'll take it under advisement. And as Tony said, when he takes it under advisement, he actually is taking it under advisement.
That's totally right. We got a chance to interact with him. He came to ESPN headquarters in Bristol, so we had like a small business, just about 50 of us, and we talked to him. And then he came to the Sloan Conference, the big nerd conference in Boston, and spoke there. And he does seem to be that way. And honestly, that's the polar opposite of his predecessor, Bud Selig. There were many qualities that Bud Selig had, but one of them was whatever he decided, that he was going down the road with, and he was never going to renege.
So and it was going to be a unanimous decision, whatever it was.
He was going to browbeat people, and I mean, this might be a little simplistic, but I wonder if that's just it's the cognitive functioning of somebody who's, once you're 80, you just become more ingrained in your thoughts the older you get. And Manfred is a younger guy, and very, very lawyerly. I mean, he is an attorney and he's a negotiator and has a way of doing things. And so, yeah, I do think it's good to be open-minded about everything. Obviously, I have a vested interest in baseball metro, but other things too. You know, baseball, I like where it's at. I'm not as, I don't know, negative about pace of play and things like that. But I do think there are ways to refine the game. Mm-hmm. And if we have someone who's interested in doing that, then that's great. That's to the betterment of baseball.
I want to talk about pace of play, some of the thoughts I have about it, some of the thoughts Jonah Carey has about it. We'll take your calls as well. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. We have Jonah Carey in studio right up to noon. It's a Jeff Blair Show. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we're back. Don't forget, Brady and Walker return to the airwaves today and on television from 1 to 4 in Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360. What?
Oh.
Go ahead.
Good luck to Tim and Sid in their new endeavor.
I guess.
Oh, yeah.
They don't need luck.
They're great.
All the money they got for making that joke, they don't need luck. They can mail it in.
I guess so. I don't know. I'm a booster. I like you guys.
They don't need luck. They're going to be fine. Everybody's going to be fine.
That's true.
Everything's fine. In conversation with Jonah Carey on the Jeff Blair Show. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. Half an hour to call up and call us with some testing questions if you want. You mentioned pace of play before the break. We know that at AA and AAA this year, a pitch clock is going to be in effect. We know that there's very few people in baseball who... Major League Baseball who want to see a pitch clock come into play. I have this theory, and I've bounced it off a couple of people, general managers, and I bounced it off Tony Clark as well, and he kind of thinks there might be something to it. I see the pitch clock as a threat, and essentially what the commissioner's office is saying to the players is, look, we're serious about this. You already know we're going to make you stay in the box. We've got a clock there between innings. We're going to be measuring games this year. And if you don't want the pitch clock, speed it up or we'll speed it up for you. And I think that may be where this is going. Do you ever see a day where there's a pitch clock in the majors? Like I'm trying to imagine a young pitcher on the mound looking at a pitch clock. Oh, gee, I better throw now. I just see arms exploding all over the place.
It's a very romantic and old-fashioned ideal about baseball, but one of the things is that baseball is not governed by any clock.
Mm-hmm.
That it's all theoretically infinite, and you're only governed by outs. This, by the way, is why people like me get very upset about bunting or things like that, because you don't want to give up the outs, because that's the only currency you have.
Yep.
And I do think it's weird, and I do wonder if that would come into play. I will point, there's two things. So it is the players, and let's start there. Travis Sochick, great young writer for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, mm-hmm. does great stuff. He has a book called Big Data Baseball that's coming out
yep.
this year. It's about the Pittsburgh Pirates and how they do statsy things and along the lines of Moneyball and the extra 2% and that idea of books. And very good. I read it. It's great. And he did a piece where he just put a clock on one game, Pirates versus, let's say, Diamondbacks. I don't even remember. Total in that game, batters spent how long outside the box, would you guess, in minutes for one game?
Outside the box?
Outside the box, just screwing around.
40 minutes?
It was 39 minutes and 51 seconds.
I just guessed.
Very
I swear
good.
To God. So, I just guessed.
But,
I haven't read
but
it.
But isn't that excruciating? I mean, that's unbelievable.
Is, yeah.
40 minutes. So, and Manfred, when we talked to him, said there's a difference between pace of game and length of game.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, it'd be great if the game is a little shorter, but like people like baseball. They're not actually that upset that the game is long. I think that what people perceive as length is pace.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you're, you know, if you grew up in a generation, well, even if you watch Mark Burley pitch for that matter, just grip it and rip it. That's it. You get the ball and you throw the ball. And you watch Clay Buchholz or Joel Peralta. Have you ever watched Joel Peralta? Oh, my God. Very slow. And it takes away from baseball a little bit. So I do think, I'm not worried about length. I do think there is something to pace. As to the pitch clock, I'm not in favor of it either. And I think that, yes, you're putting the onus on the players, but it's in the rule book that you have to stay in the batter's box. And the people that are not enforcing it are the umpires. And so, yes, okay, you could say it's a threat, but maybe it's a threat to the umpires in some ways too, because they just have to enforce the rules that are on the books. Now, David Ortiz with his song and dance, he's spitting on his hands and he's doing the Watusi and whatever. Like, that's a dated reference. I like that.
It is good.
That's good. Thank
the
you.
Watusi. It is a good one.
But
these guys in there have no clue what you're doing.
No.
Travis
no.
has no clue.
I like that I've gone over to the other side of the age gap. But before, it's like, oh, a young generation of right. No. Now I'm just an old guy. It's good.
Yeah.
So, somebody who has tenure in that way, it might be difficult to enforce it on them, but there's still the other 99% of the league that are doing this thing too. And I do think this is on the umpires almost as much as it is the player.
Tenure. David Ortiz is 11 year.
Nicely done.
Sorry. That's an old Ricky Henderson
We're
joke.
Back to Abbott and Costello stuff.
I
now.
Know.
It's good.
I know. Michael and Markham, you're on, as opposed to Mark and Mikeham. Michael and Markham, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. And I really like you two guys. And
we do too.
Thanks.
What I'm about to say is not directed at either of you.
All right.
But I do think there's a level of optimism in the media and in the fan base. And I just don't get it, you know? Like, I know it's very easy to say if all of our guys have career years, we'll be a better team. Anybody can say that. And, you know, and even before Stroman got injured, I just look at the team you were last year is the team you're going to be this year, not counting who's coming in and who's going out. So if you look at who left, we lost our starting left fielder, our starting center fielder, our starting DH. We lost our closer. And if you look who came in, okay, and our third baseman. We upgraded on third base. I think it's a downgrade in left field. Center field, at best, is a saw-off, because I mm-hmm. didn't think Rasmus, he had problems, Kobe did,
yep.
but I don't think power and defense were necessarily them.
Ooh, okay.
Edwin's bat's going to be in the lineup anyways, so I think you downgraded by losing Lind. And the upgrade on catcher, I think that upgrade is mostly a defensive upgrade, which is only going to affect 120 games. And, you know, I hear people talking about him framing pitches, and that's all.
Jonah's shaking his head. I'm going to let you get in here. Go ahead, Jonah.
Russ Martin's a phenomenal offensive player. He had an on-base over 400 last year. The various and sundry catchers last season were not wonderful. No, that might have been the biggest upgrade in any position for any team in all of baseball,
yeah.
not to put too fine a point on it. But yeah, no, I am sensitive to some of your other arguments. I do think Adam Lind is a little bit of an underrated player. Again, a big on-base guy. I'm a big on-base mm-hmm. proponent. There's no question about that. Relief pitching is replaceable, but Jansen was certainly a good pitcher and a relatively reliable pitcher, and now they're going to depend on kids like Osuna and Castro. There are questions about that. But I think we might be sleeping a little bit on Saunders, who by traditional numbers doesn't look that great, but will get a boost in this ballpark and has some good, pretty well-rounded skills.
Yeah, he's a much better defensive player than Melky is.
That's exactly right, too. So, I mean, even though Melky's offensive numbers, that's a great point. You know, it might be closer to a wash than you think. And Donaldson is just this great all-around player, not only a middle-of-the-order hitter, but just a phenomenal defender, too. The pieces fit. No, I like them. I do think they are a better team on paper because of Donaldson and Martin. But you know, to your point, I get it. You can't just assume that Sanchez and Norris and all the young guys come together at all at the same time. And What I imagine is going to happen with the Jays is they're going to be in the mix. It's going to get to July, and they're going to be in the mix. Baltimore's going to be pretty good, and Boston's going to be pretty good, and they will have an opportunity to make whatever upgrades they need to make. To your point, they lost so-and-so. Oh, whatever. Travis didn't work out at second base. All right, we'll see if we can make moves. But the fact that we can sit here and pretty confidently talk about the fact that the Jays will contend into July, and then they can think about what they want to do, that's good. We're talking about potential playoff baseball. That's great. This is the longest drought, as people know, in all of baseball for a playoff team, not since Joe Carter did what Joe Carter did. Have we had a playoff team in Toronto?
And, you know, I was also going to say, further to the caller's point, and Shai Davidi wrote this much earlier, the Blue Jays were really, really lucky with health last year.
Yep.
With their pitchers, at least. And, you know, knock on wood, whatever wood's around here. They need... I tried to tell someone the other day, yeah, I'm with you. I think they contend. They need an awful lot to go well, I think. But then, you know, I look at this division.
Who
wins 90? Does somebody win 92 games in this division?
See, Baltimore won 96 last year, but I think that's a little bit of an aberration. The bottom of the division was kind of, there's a lot of weak sauce in that division last year. So they beat up on some teams and there were injuries and whatever. But, you know, I do think that the... now we talked about that the prospect industry has evolved. We also have the projection industry, that with Pacoda and Zips and all these projection systems, and they all hate Baltimore every year. And the Orioles overachieve. And by the way, Weeders was injured most of last year, and Machado was injured most of. They did not have everything go right. I think that there is a tendency with the advanced math, for some reason, to underestimate the Orioles. Maybe it's because of Buck Showalter. Maybe it's because of something complicated like lineup sequence or whatever. But I think they're going to be pretty good. I do not think they're going to win 96 games again. Yeah. And that gives the Jays an opportunity. If the Jays were playing the same division as the Nationals, I don't think anybody would be taking them to win the division, but they're not.
Should mention, by the way, that there is further reason to like the Orioles' chances. Rock Kubutka of Masson just reporting that J.P. Arencibi has been reassigned to minor league camp.
Speaking of former Blue Jays catchers.
So there you go. There you go. Chasen Markham, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hi, how you doing, guys?
Good, good.
Quick question, Mike. With Alexandropoulos, I know a lot of them made if, you know, if the team doesn't do well this year, you know, do we hold them accountable? And I think more often than not, you got to hold the players accountable. When you look at what he's done for the minor league system, when he first came in, a lot of young players, that was his big focus when he first came in. And even now, when you look at Sanchez and Norris, and then going far down the list, you know, to Hoffman, the two young guys in the bullpen, Osuna and Castro, the top five in the lineup that you see there probably could be potentially the best in baseball. And then under the radar, maybe Smoke might do well in Rogers Center, and the bottom third with Sanders, Pilar, Pompey, Travis, and how well they could hit. If the team doesn't do well, is it necessarily Anthopoulos' fault? Should his job be at a risk, regardless, and so on?
It's interesting.
What your thoughts are?
Joan and I were just talking about this. I mean, it is a unique Toronto thing. We do love to kill the GM. I mean, we really do. More than any other market I know, more than any other market I've been in every sport, it is the GM's fault in this city. And I admit that at times I've had a little bit to do with that. Joan and I were talking off the air, and I made the point, I think there's been a kind of a subtle change in the dialogue around Alex Anthopoulos. Joan, I think more and more people are looking at this team now and saying, okay, there are some good young arms. Whether or not they're all going to turn into Cy Young Award winners is irrelevant. There's some good young arms here. Alex has positioned the organization well in terms of pitching. If you look at the payroll, they've got, I believe, $46 million on the books for next year. It goes down to something like 30, I think it's 39 the year after. This is a team that's got a lot of, even if payroll stays the same, this is a team that's got a lot of flexibility, and it's got the most important commodity in baseball, good, young, cost-effective starting pitching. You cannot beat that.
And you haven't mentioned probably my three favorite things that Alex Anthopoulos has done. Number one is sign Jose Bautista to that tremendous contract. Holy moly, is that a bargain.
One of the most team-friendly contracts in baseball history, without question.
And everything about Bautista is awesome. He's a great player. He's a likable guy. He's just like, he's a dream. He's exactly what you want for a franchise guy. That's great. Then Encarnacion... Alex did not acquire Bautista, by the way. That was his predecessor.
That was JP, yep.
But he did acquire Encarnacion and then sign him also to a ridiculously amazing contract.
JP acquired Encarnacion.
Did he really?
But Alex Yeah, Alex got the extension.
The extension. Well, yes. Okay, so good job by JP.
Yeah.
But got the extension. And number three is unloading the contract of Vernon Wells, which is the biggest magic trick I've seen in, I don't know, 10 years of baseball. It would have been nice if they didn't flip Mike Napoli afterwards for Frank Francisco. Not so wonderful. But listen, they were owed, Wells was owed so much money, and they got that off the books. And I think that's become a focus, and not I think, it has become a focus in baseball to have that kind of quote-unquote flexibility that, you know, Bautista and Encarnacion are signed, but they're not signed until they're 40 years old. They're signed for X amount of time. Burley and Dickey have been pretty good. Maybe not great, but they're only signed for X amount of time, and they can roll over. It depends a lot on not just, you know, we give credit to the GM, scouting director, cross-checkers, player development people, all those people, but they have made it happen to get the young guys up such that when we do roll over to 2016, it's a team with not much payroll commitment, but yet you can feel good about the talent. So, yeah, I do think that overall it's been positive. But obviously, listen, I did not grow up a Blue Jays fan. I haven't had to deal with 22 years of ineptitude, nor having a hockey team that makes it more frustrating. So I get it. I understand it.
And we should also mention that one of the other things he's done as well is, he's locked up a middle-of-the-order hitter, Josh Donaldson.
Sure.
And he's got him under control for four more years. And even if at some point they're going to have to make a decision on Bautista and Encarnacion, I think they probably keep one of the two. I think it's probably Encarnacion, but at least you can do that knowing now that you've got that middle of the order bat that you wouldn't have had. And quite frankly, even if Brett Laurie developed into the type of major league player we thought he would, I don't think too many people saw Brett Laurie as a middle of the order hitter. In this organization, they saw him and kind of a different light.
Brett Laurie's upside is Josh Donaldson. That's the way to say it.
That's the best way to put it. Joan, it's great of you to drop by today. Again, the book is up and away. The Kid, the Hawk, Rock, Vladdy, Pedro, LeGrand, Orange, Yuppie, The Crazy Business of Baseball, and the ill-fated but unforgettable Montreal Expos. Jonah and Andrew Stoughton will be at Opera Bob's tonight. And God knows where it'll go from there. I'm sure it'll be some den of iniquity.
7 p.m. It's going to be kind of just a one-on-one, he and I talking about, we'll do a little book stuff, but a lot of Jays, a lot of baseball in general. And then it's just hanging out. So please come on down. It's a great bar. And I have a feeling that there will be other festivities.
I'm sure there will be. And then you'll be in, give me your tour.
Okay. You're going to. So let's see, so I'm going to be in Montreal on Wednesday. There's a gala. I will be sitting at the head table.
Oh,
this is true.
Lord.
With Tim Raines, Andre Dawson, Andres Galarraga, Vladimir Guerrero, and the mayor of Montreal for some reason. I don't know how I scammed that. Thursday night, there's a charity bowling event that's happening at the Old Forum at 6 p.m. Me, Ellis Valentine, Al Oliver. That's going to be super fun. Some great old expos. Friday, we've got there's a thing in McLean's Pub in Montreal, which is great. Then there's the game Friday night, which is going to be awesome. The Jays versus the Reds. Saturday, we've got another game. And then after that, Pitch Talks, which is a great series, which started here. Kevin Kennedy, local boy, of course, the brother of Brendan Kennedy. And that's going to be at 5:30. And that's me and a lot of the old Montreal guys, Mitch Melnick, and actually Rich Griffin will be there, a bunch of other people. And that'll be super fun. So please check out all that stuff. Oh, and if you feel like going to Pembroke, Ontario.
Pembroke, home of the Lumber Kings. I think they're still called the Lumber Kings.
A week from Tuesday night at the Knights of Columbus Hall, if you happen to
be. Oh, my God.
Yeah, we're going to be doing that. So that'll be fun, too.
And nobody knows how to rock and roll like the Knights of Columbus.
I've never been to Pembroke, Ontario. I'm kind of excited.
It'll be fun. That's it for us. Hockey Central's next. Don't forget, Brady and Walker back in the air on Sportsnet 590, the fan of Sportsnet 360, 1-4 today. Have a great day, everybody.